Radio.
You're listening to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast that explores the bold projects, exciting opportunities, and the growing reach of blockchain and cryptocurrency. Whether you've got skin in the game or you're just crypto curious, keep an open mind, enjoy the conversation, and stay CryptoCurrent. Now here's your host, Richard Carthon.
Hey everyone, your host here, Richard Carthon, and this is part two of Chris Snook's two-part series. Now, I hope in the first episode that you enjoyed all of the knowledge that he had to give, and there's just so much more in part two that's about to happen. I know I left you on a cliffhanger on the last episode, but believe me, it was worth the wait. I hope you believe so too, and enough of me talking. Sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Trying to learn as much as I can, trying to grow business, trying to, you know, establish myself in the world. I'm trying to build. Everything's about building and learning and growing right now.
Okay. What do you fear?
Not being able to take care of myself, right? Not having my own independence, being a quote unquote failure by the world's view. And honestly, like just incurring so much debt to where I don't know what I'm going to do.
Do you plan on having a family at any point? And if not, that's okay. But do you know people that do?
Yeah, 100%. So like everything I'm doing right now is to provide for my future family. I'm trying to set a good foundation to set them up for success.
Okay. So Richard, you are unique for your unique reasons. But is any of what you just told me unique as far as something that people your age care about?
Probably not.
It's not. Every generation cares about that. When I was 25 years old and I turned 25, it was the one time on a birthday that I've cried, and I was almost like overwhelmed to the point of where I was at 25. I had broken off an engagement, which I'm glad that I did because it was the right decision. I was not going to be happy if I ended up moving forward with marrying that person. Mm-hmm. But because I had started that trajectory at 23, I had all these assumptions in my head that by 25, I'd have a kid out. I'd be making 75K a year. I'd have my master's degree, you know, blah, 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 blah. Right? Right. Because when you're 18, you get up 7 years is forever from now. Jesus, that's a lifetime.
Right.
Because at 18, 7 years earlier, you were 11. So it feels like forever. So at 25, I woke up. I was halfway through an MBA. I had finished an MSBA except for defending the thesis in exercise physiology. I was not married, which was okay with me. That was actually fine. But I had no prospects of when I was going to want to be in a relationship again. Because at that point, I didn't even want to get in a relationship at that point. So that was a whole mind twist. Because then I'm thinking, well, how am I going to have kids? Like, you know, like, oh, I don't have kids and I want them someday. And I don't even want a relationship right now. So that's going to be way out in the future. And I was working in a bar, bouncing. Mm-hmm. And I woke up and I'm like, I'm a piece of shit. I'm two master's degree deep. The market tells me I'm not worth more than $37,000 a year. I live in San Diego where that's not even broke. That's like poverty.
It's hard.
And I did everything I was supposed to.
Right.
So guess what? My parents, your parents, their parents at 25 felt the same way. That's the point.
Yeah.
So why does that matter? Well, in 1980, if you have the vantage point you look at right now, and you're looking out into the world, whether you understand all these things or not, here's what your reality was. The Dow Jones average was 972. 972. Okay. Interest rates were in the teens. So yeah, a mortgage was going to cost you maybe 13, 14, 15% on your interest for a home.
And so for quick perspective, the Dow Jones is at about 24K right now, for perspective, everyone.
For perspective, yeah, for those who aren't following that. 972 versus 24,000. And the real lesson is this: 972 with nothing but upside because it was low, 24,000, 26,000 hit all time highs this year in a market that obviously doesn't function from a fundamental standpoint, meaning it's no one believes that any of these businesses are going to have the future that they think they're going to have. It's totally disconnected from reality. So if I'm a 26-year-old today, last thing I'm thinking about doing is buying in the stock market. Now, here's what's going to screw people's minds. The stock market's going to go higher.
Yep.
And, you know, I may be wrong on that, but I don't think so. And a lot of smarter people than me, a lot of richer people than me are in the camp of, we're going to see what's called the, you know, the blow off top. We're not even there yet, because we have to manufacture this growth in order to keep this Ponzi scheme going. So it'll go higher, but it's a gambler's trap. It's like the roulette wheel at Vegas, right? Mm-hmm. And unless you're an AI algorithm bot with a bunch of billions behind your name, you have no chance of winning that game. So as a 26-year-old, you don't need to know why. You just gut level probably know the market's not for me. Equities aren't for me.
Yeah.
Okay. But in a 26-year-old 1980, the markets were, you know, brand new. They were roaring. Equities was what cryptos are now. People were starting to go public on the small caps. There was, you know, you've seen the movie Wolf of Wall Street. Like, that all happened because people were ready to play the game called penny stocks, like altcoins.
Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. Altcoins were penny stocks of old.
Exactly. So that's a great.
So the point is in 1980, I'm trying to figure out how not to be a PCOS. I'm trying to figure out how maybe I could have a family someday. Maybe I could afford something someday. Maybe I could not be in debt for up to my eyeballs someday. That's what every 25, 26-year-old thinks. And in 1980, they had interest rates where you could put money in a bank and save and earn 10 points. So literally $1,000 in a bank was earning you 10% interest. We don't have to tell you what it's earning today because it's not earning anything.
No, not the.
It hasn't earned over a quarter of a point of interest in a savings account. And all these teaser rates of 1.125, 1.25, 2.5, 5% are on the first $2,000 invested, not the rest.
Yep.
And they're teaser rates to get you to open an account. And that's been the case since, you know, I don't even know, 2015, 2016. So there's no savings, right? You've heard about the savers get punished. And the reason why you have more billionaires compounding growth like crazy is because it became about shareholder value somewhere in that middle, right?
Yep.
And so unless you were in the shareholder side, you couldn't benefit. So savers have been punished, but back then you could save. The yield curve, not going to get into what the yield curve is. If some of you know, great. If not, just understand the basics. At that time, the yield curve, there was a lot of spread in it. So what it looked like was over the next 40 years, you could be safe and you could make money. There was growth ahead in the market. And so when you're looking at 26, most people think I'm going to retire by 65. That's not true, but that's what they think.
Right.
And most people aren't going to work for their whole life because they love it, because the majority of people don't see work and play as the same thing. Entrepreneurs, maybe this audience, typically do. Okay, so So it's not about retiring and never working again and sitting on a beach and being lazy and getting fat, but that's most people's dream, because the 87% of people, according to stats I saw years ago, hate what they do. They just do it for the money.
Yeah, and to sustain the lifestyle that.
And so I don't think it's probably too much different today than it was a generation ago, because it becomes a thing. You get to an age, and now you got to provide. You're out of mommy and daddy's house, and you want to be a big girl or boy, and so you put on the big pants and you go to work. And so that's what every person your age group was thinking. 1980. The difference was the upside was in markets. It was in bonds. It was in that. So you'll hear baby boomers say, and you'll hear financial advisors say, no one's ever lost money in bonds for 40 years. Because it's true. Right. But prior to that baby boomer generation of 78 million entering that space, that wasn't true. It didn't even exist. Mortgage-backed securities didn't exist until the late 70s.
And you're bringing
up a lot of these products got invented for the boomers, and they drove consumption. And if you're 26 today, last point, then I'll let you ask the question. Last point is, if you're 26 today, the only thing you see, Dow's at all-time highs and makes no sense. Bond rates are zero or negative.
Yep.
You can't. So you're basically paying to have risk-free money, access to your money, not earning anything on it. Housing prices are through the roof because everyone treated it like an ATM for those years. And then we just kicked the can down the road, and interest rates are at all-time lows. So yeah, you can afford to, but there's no one to, so you better love it, right? But it's at such a high price that it's really hard to justify. And if you do lock it in, great. You locked it in for 15 or 30 years at this rate, but you better love it, because you're not going to flip it for a profit. You're going to live in it. Which is what it was supposed to be. And so the only place where you can see upside, if I'm 25, 26, is crypto.
Right. And actually, this transitions into my next question. And one of the things you touched on was the four kinds of money. And you really touched on like why crypto in one of those is probably one of the best directions to be looking right now. Can you expand on that?
Well, I want to caveat this. I just said the only place you can look is crypto. Saying it's the best is too generic.
Yeah.
Right. Because that'd be like saying the stock market was a good play to 1980s 26-year-olds, and most of them got ripped off in a bunch of penny stock BS. everything is, you have to understand how to start to evaluate. So you got to decide whether you work for money or whether you you work to live or whether you live to work, right? You have to kind of make some of those fundamental decisions, and you're not going to, you might change your mind over time, but you kind of understand, like, what is it that economic independence means to me? Because it's not a number. It's your number.
Yeah.
And your ability to, your need to understand the mechanics of this, other than the curiosity side, is going to be based on what that is, what the answer to that question is. So you don't have to become an expert in any of this crap, including crypto, unless you really want to hit big numbers. But if your number is, you know what, man, if I could do what I want from wherever I was or from my place of residence right now, and I could make $8,000 a month, or I could make $4,000 a month, but I had zero debt and I was able to surf and I'm happy, like, that is just as noble as someone who wants to go out and try and put a dent in the universe, because it's honest. It's true to who you are. So the real net of this whole thing, and I know a lot of other people out there are finally starting to talk about this, is what is your reason? Not what is the reason. What is your reason for any of this stuff? Mm-hmm. And realize that it's going to change. There was a point where I thought $75,000 a year was all the money in the world. And there's been months where I've lost that.
Yeah.
And there's guys who put zeros on that number. And I like, I just understand that we're all broke at different levels. Right. So I think that's the caveat. But the answer is, crypto is the future because of two of this fundamental thing. There's always been two kinds of money for the most of civilization's history. Prior to civilization, when we were just roaming around, there was basically just gold and silver, but we didn't even really need that, except for when we wanted to exchange stuff. But when we started to settle and civilize, gold and silver were basically what I call nature's money. Some people call it God's money. They came from the earth. They were rare. They were, you know, they were universally accepted. They've held their value. 3,000, loaves of bread or slices of bread cost an ounce of gold. You know, you could buy a formal men's suit with an ounce of gold back in, you know, Jesus's time. You can do that now, right? It's the same, right? A formal men's suit's about $1,500, $1,700 if you buy something that's not crappy. And that's what an ounce of gold is. And you do the math on a slice of bread, and you multiply that by 3,000, you can pretty much get a slice of bread for 40, 50 cents. So, you know, it's the same, right? It's a store of value. Right. And it was money. And then we created fiat, right? By decree. That's all fiat means, is by decree. It's not just about money. You can actually have digital fiat. And that's one thing that I don't think a lot of people think about, is that cryptocurrency doesn't mean it's decentralized. It doesn't mean it's Bitcoin. Cryptocurrency means it's using public key cryptography. It means it's a more secure method and ledger balance for immutable transactions. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, it means depending on how many nodes are in the network and if they're decentralized or if they have shared interests, right? So cryptocurrency can be fiat too, and you'll see central bank digital fiat. They'll call them central bank digital currencies, but the reality is they're just by decree. They're made up out of thin air, just like the dollar is today.
Yeah.
And 97% of the dollars in the market are ones and zeros on a ledger balance, not paper money. So it's funny when we say the printer goes burr, you know, for every dollar that we print going burr, for every three of those, there's 97 digital ones that don't exist anywhere. Mm. Right. So, I think the last time I checked, the amount of US dollars in circulation was somewhere around 17 trillion actual physical US dollars in circulation. Only 1.6 or 1.7 trillion of those are actual physical C notes and 20s and fives.
That's wild.
So my point is that when you think about the people's money, which is Bitcoin, it's the first time where you created a way to transact and a potential store of value. And we won't get into the debate on that yet. Too much time for that. The point is that Satoshi created a platform by which, and an application by which, we for one had the people's money for the first time. Mm-hmm. You can't subpoena it. You can't shut it down. You can try and kill it. You can ban it. People will go elsewhere, right? Or they'll do it on a table. Like, there's no way to kill it at this point, unless everyone decides it's not worth believing in anymore, and they're going to go take one of these other three as their main belief system. But how can you do that when there's something that can't be corrupted as easily, that's got 11 years plus worth of history, that is barely even getting started, and that has all kinds of people interested, from the smallest toddler buying a couple sats a week to the Winklevosses? right? Like, where do you have a community that's that diversified in its population? Mm-hmm. You have people that barely have running water in, you know, third world countries that have used Bitcoin, and then you have the Winklevi.
Right.
In the same network, believing the same thing. I think that's an interesting dynamic at play. The fourth piece is what we call corporate money, which is obviously the first example that hasn't been manifest yet, but is still in process, is Libra and the Libra network and you know, all that, right? So all of a sudden now, governments are not trying to just control. By the way, 80% of the silver and gold, 80% of the gold in existence out of the ground that's ever been mined is held by the top seven central banks in a vault. So the 20% that's left of official gold is the stuff that is on your wrist or available for sale in, you know, 1 ounce gold bars or whatever that you and I can go pick up. So the bottom line is, gold is still a great store of value. You should own it for sure. If you can buy some, I'm not giving investment advice personally, but you should look at it because no matter what, it'll preserve your purchasing power. It's got thousands of years of proving that. So whatever the dollar hyperinflates to or deflates to, you don't have to worry if you got gold. You can always preserve your current level of wealth.
Yeah.
And so the problem, though, is that the people who make the rules are the ones who make the fiat currency. And when they blow this system up, which they are and will at some point, they're just going to come back to the table and ante up with their gold. And China's going to have more than it did the last time in Bretton Woods. And so they'll have a seat. They'll have a big seat.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's the game the central banks are playing. So the average, you know, 7.79 billion rest of us that don't get to be in those tables really only have people's money. And we are the product of those making the corporate money. And we don't mind that if it allows us to convert, you know, and transact more efficiently because there's utility in that. So I'm not on Facebook, but, you know, I get it. I'll join Libra with another wallet and, you know, I'll transact with the 2.5 billion people there through my businesses or through my personal, because it'll be impossible not to. It'll replace cash if that ever gets done. I firmly believe that China's already going to do it next November. And WeChat and Ant Financial and Alibaba will pull off the biggest Sputnik moment ever when they basically launch on a Chinese blockchain with Chinese crypto, a largest singles day sale event ever. And it's all done through cryptocurrency that the Chinese government controls. That may not happen this November, but it's happening soon.
DCEP is coming. There's not a whole lot anyone can do to stop it. And you bring up a really good point. And even through that explanation, one of the other interesting things you like brought on that I want to finish with is the concept of like, why is hoarding money a problem?
Yeah, I love it. So I know you did a little research on Mr. Gesell. So Sylvia Gesell was born in Argentina, but the piece that we didn't get to in the other video at length, and we'll go into a little deeper here, is Gesell's theory was this concept of free money. And he called it free money primarily because he wanted to liberate money from the need to be a store of value. He thought there was a fundamental philosophical, you know, thing wrong. And again, you can disagree or agree with this. I encourage you to be like me, which is try not to accept, reject, or neglect any idea you hear for the first time. Try to understand why you should and what paradigms you have in place that if they're serving you, you can stick with. But if they're not, maybe you reconsider, because that's what real learning is, right? And, and I'm doing it as a reminder to myself more than anything else. But try this on for a minute. So money has always been a store of value as well as a medium for exchange, right? It served a couple different roles. And so currency really is only a medium of exchange. So currencies aren't real. When Jamie Dimon called Bitcoin not real, he was saying it and pissed people off in the crypto community because they don't understand currency versus money. The reality is neither is the dollar. The dollar is not real. Right? It's a ledger balance. You can't own a ledger balance. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter who you are, you can't. That's why it's like, it's almost, we got to change the vernacular. You can't invest in cryptocurrency. You can speculate in cryptocurrency because cryptocurrency is nothing more than a ledger balance. Just like fiat. It's recording debits and credits into a ledger balance, right? So you can speculate whether those are going to be exchanged at higher or lower rates. And that's what we're doing when we quote unquote invest in crypto or when we invest in Forex, in currency exchange markets.
Yep.
But so Sylvia Gesell said currency needs to be in velocity, right? That's where it actually moves economies. And so we're seeing this right now. The biggest problem that the Fed or any of these central banks face, and they've faced it before, is that when I lower interest rates, I'm doing that because I'm trying to create stimulus. I'm trying to increase and encourage borrowing, because if people borrow, then they do stuff like buy buildings, build buildings, hire people, do R&D, because I'm making it cheap enough to get a higher return on capital by using borrowed dollars versus earned dollars to build assets. So when they do this to stimulate. But the problem is when they stimulate, what's typically going on in the economy?
Downturns.
Sorry. And what is human nature? What is habit? When things get tight, what do?
Save. Don't spend nothing.
We pucker up, right? We hoard. We save. We cut expenses.
So we buy up all the toilet paper and all of
the store. So what happens is, and it's happened forever, and this was happening in the late 1800s when Gesell was alive, through the early 1900s before he died. But the first experiment happened in the 30s after he was dead. And I believe it was in Netherlands or somewhere in that part of the world. And essentially the economy was ruined. Everyone was out of work, 27% unemployment, all that stuff. And so they created this, Sylvia Gesell inspired free money model, where literally the town, so not the state, not the country, not that, they started issuing money. And basically anybody who owned a business in that town created what was called free money, and it was stamped like a coupon. So it expired. So imagine if I paid you $4,000 a month as, a living wage, which is, the median income for most states in this country on an individualized basis.
Right.
Let's say I paid you $4,000 a month, but at the end of that month, it was worth zero. Are you going to save it?
Probably.
No.
I mean, what am I going to do if it's worth nothing?
So I write you $4,000 a month. I write you $4,000. You just got paid. But that money is going to be unspendable on June 1. What are you going to do with it?
Try to sell it. Try to get some sort of value out of it.
Well, you're going to buy stuff. You're going to put it in circulation.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's worthless in 30 days.
Oh, now, okay. I misunderstood the question. So if you're giving me money, you're saying in 30 days, this is not going to be worth anything.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I'm blowing it. Got to. Like, if it's not going to be worth anything.
Because if you don't spend it, you get nothing. If you do spend it, you get $4,000 worth of whatever you spend it on.
Right.
Now, you could choose to spend that on groceries, on rent, on a car, on going out to the movies, on buying gold. Mm-hmm. So you could choose to save some of it, but you're not going to be able to save it in the dollar that you were given, that free money dollar, whatever that is, right? That franc, or that banknote, or that, US, whatever the thing was. So what happened was, in this 90-day case study, they saw 20% growth. They saw employment go below 3% because now all of a sudden you had money to spend. So what did you do? You hired people. What did that do? That increased productivity. What did that do? That gave you more people that were on expiring money to go spend, that ate out at restaurants or that bought food or that needed a house over their head.
Right.
And so the theory was super controversial in the 30s. And John Maynard Keynes actually called him the forgotten prophet, because what happened was, when we hit the Depression, story tells that one of the things that was presented before the New Deal came out, one of the things that presented to Roosevelt was this form of, hey, one thing we could do is this Gesell theory thing. We could basically make, because we've already forced everybody to pay us in US dollars. You can't pay for American goods without giving us US dollars. So they already kind of started that. So we're like, you can't pay back our debts in anything but US dollars. So we kind of already have this mechanism. What if we made that money expire so people didn't hoard it? So they floated it. He ended up confiscating gold and then pegging gold at the new price and everything. That was the move he made. But he considered Gesell theory. Who knows what history would have been otherwise? What, right or wrong? Can't tell, can't go back. Here's my point. What's wrong with Gesell theory in the sense of the velocity? Nothing. That's what currency is supposed to do. Most people live rent to rent or month to month anyway. Mm-hmm. So, at first you go, oh, I wouldn't want that. Like, my paycheck's going to get expired at the end of the month. Yeah, but you don't have any left anyway. You're maxing out 15, 20% more on credit card. So what are you complaining about?
No.
You're not saving anyway. And even if you did, savings is at zero. So you're not investing and you're not saving anyway. That's the majority of people. You're just flowing money. And the reason why you're hoarding it is because you're afraid the flow is going to stop. What if you were guaranteed the flow wasn't going to stop because it expired at the end of the month? incentivized. That kind of gets interesting if you think about it. Now, what's problematic about Gesell theory is at the time, the only thing that existed was printing press. You didn't have a way other than manual ledgers. But now we live in a world where literally, think about this for a minute. You could have three-dimensional programmable money. Central banks, or if the central banks fail to do it or fail to regulate against it, and state banks start launching again under some charter or some other parallel system, and they start issuing Gesell-style money, currency, not money. They call it currency. And they go, hey, guess what? If you employ people and you want to pay them in this, they can spend it everywhere that they already shop in their town. And here's the deal. At the end of 30 days, it's evaporated. And we don't have to worry about it. There's no way to not track it because it's all crypto. It's all digital. So I airdrop it into your wallet on the month of the first of the month. And it auto debits to where it auto debits to. And it goes into their wallets. And what's left over, you can spend on whatever you want. Except if you are in Colorado and you leave Colorado and you want to buy weed in Arizona, it's not legal in Arizona. So it won't go through. Or if you're in a, you know, like you could program rules of space into the currency, which says if I walk across a geo and my phone tracks that I'm across a certain geographic thing, certain rules apply and others don't. And I don't have to wonder anymore through smart contracts and through rules of space, that money or that currency will only do certain things in certain places. So now you have, you know, Islamic countries and you have Christian countries and you have different things where certain things aren't allowed or certain allowed to be consumed on certain days. And it doesn't matter. I can come in and I can spend my money and I can control what happens without any oversight. So I create all this efficiency in the government because I don't need all these people tracking down or punishing people anymore because the currency. And I also know exactly where every single cent or whatever it's called that's been distributed is at any given time. I don't wonder whether it's under Richard or Chris's mattress because he's thinking the pandemic's going to last longer than everybody else. I don't have to wonder where the cash is because there is no wondering. It's all on a ledger balance. It all expires at a certain date. And if he spent it on gold or some other asset, I at least know where he spent it because I track that.
Right. Yeah.
And now,
that could be so
there's powerful. A whole other gamut, right? Because then it's like, well, okay, but then they'll know I bought everything. Well, no, because then privacy coins and other things will emerge.
Yeah. And it can be multifaceted and layered and just used in so many different ways. And it'll be interesting to see if anyone picks up on this and tries to apply it. But it, I mean, just listening from a
practical perspective. I think there are. I'm not, you know, the only, I don't know who else is talking about Gesell theory right now, but there's versions of this out there. I mean, when you think about the good side of that, like think of all these talks about universal basic income, right? They're not wrong, but the problem is that we're politicizing them. Mm-hmm. I think what the COVID-19 crisis has shown is that universal basic income is actually, could be a very interesting topic because we're already at 30 million plus unemployed in this country right now. Mm-hmm. And it ain't going to get better anytime soon. I mean, no. I'm not saying that doomsday or alarmist. I'm saying do the math. Everybody right now still thinks a good percentage of most people think we're going to be in a V-shaped recovery. Right? No. Which means as soon as we reopen, everything's going to go back to where it was. That's not statistically and probability-wise, McKinsey and everybody's doing research on this. At best, it looks like a really long U. Right. It might be an L.
Yeah, hockey stick.
And if it's a U or an L, that means 30 million people aren't going back to work tomorrow anytime soon. But here's one thing they are doing. They all have their smartphone and they're not giving it up. And mm-hmm. just by the nature of that smartphone, even if they have to turn off home internet and even if they have to turn off and get rid of their laptops and they sell everything else they own, they will be subsidized if nothing else and they will not get rid of their smartphone. People without running water in Africa have a smartphone. So you have this whole world of 7.8 billion people and there's over 10 billion devices and it's going to go to 14 billion very quickly, even inside of all this. And they're all kicking off data exhaust to the tune of 10 gigabits every 10 minutes right now as the current rate of data waste, literally exhaust. What if I could give people not a universal basic income on need, meaning I give it to them because they're poor or I don't give it to them because they earn over 150 grand or I don't give them any because they're a millionaire. What if I just said, you're a human, you're kicking off data exhaust. That data is like oil. If we can refine that, it's valuable for healthcare, for these different things, especially if it's de-identified. And so every single one of us, regardless of our wealth, deserves maybe a universal basic income off of data, but how are you going to deploy it? The way they're deploying stimulus checks or PPP money? Hell no. because that doesn't work. That's not transparent. But you could do it with something of a Gesell crypto model. And I think even though a lot of people that are libertarian, including myself, would get hung up on the, you know, the trackability and all that, the bottom line is that for the mass market of society, it would create an economy again in a way that would be really interesting. And what people did with their money is still up to them. And it would create all this new innovation for the people that did care about privacy or wanted to store wealth in different asset classes. But it would also create flow so that there could actually be growth again while we build this new stuff. And it's tied not to need, it's tied to an asset, which is data that we're all kicking off and manufacturing at unprecedented amounts of calculated load every single breath of every day.
Yeah. No, and you bring up...
I think should be thrown out. The problem is they're being politicized because it's, again, it's the war against the have and have nots.
Right.
The Democrats and Republicans are going to each save us.
Right.
And so we got years to go before we get...
These are absolutely, you know, gems of ideas and things that need to be thought through. And I'm confident someone is going to hear this and going to just run with it and try to figure out like how this can be applied, just because it's, you need to be able to think bigger and have like new perspectives on how things can and should work to then be able to find new creative solutions to this unique problem that we're all dealing with right now. But above all, Chris, man, I appreciate you spending this time with us. You dropped a ton of knowledge, a ton of stuff for people to think about, a ton of interest. But before you leave, you know, what is a final thought you want to leave with everybody here today?
You know, I don't know enough about your audience, but I do know, you know, every single one of us is running through, you know, different waves of this stuff, right? Like some of us have lost loved ones. Some of us are worried or wanting to prevent that. Some of us are unemployed. Some of us are pregnant. Some of us are running a business or maybe multiple and wondering if we're going to get, you know, there's so many things going on in people's lives right now. The message, without it being like just based in ideological positivity or that, history tells us that human beings are unique in the sense that we have found so far in our 10,000 years of recorded history, through every collapse that we've had, including the Dark Ages, we have found a way forward that benefited more percentage of humanity than the prior cycle. Mm-hmm. We got a lot of work to do. We got a lot of problems out there. We have a lot of things that aren't right. And if I'm 25, if I'm 45, if I'm any age, because age really is just a matter of your mental health and how you feel and your energy levels. But if I'm 25, I'm starting to get real serious about being patient and being overly obsessive about this kind of consumption. I'm less interested, if I could give you any advice looking back 20 years, I'm less interested in consuming to impress other people, and I'm more interested in consuming knowledge at the level of depth where I can be the, I can fit in any boardroom or any situation room 10, 15, 20 years from now, and I could add value to that conversation even if I only say one thing. That was my goal when I started out. I didn't really have a goal other than that. I just wanted to be able to add value in a conversation with people that were way richer, way smarter, and way more powerful than me. And that kind of disciplined me to this, you know, daily digestion of whatever I felt like I needed to learn or was curious or even maybe that stumped me a little bit that I had to force myself to get into a little bit. And so my advice would be, whether you're 25 and you got a little bit of runway, you know, learn, do this. Don't worry about what you're going to do. Worry about who you're going to be. And start being it now, right? And if right. I'm 45, realize I'm in a position where, you know, I'm going to make the decisions that are going to impact two sides of this coin. I'm going to have the energy and the youth that I'm going to rely on from my Gen Y and Gen Z counterparts. I'm going to have my children that I'm doing it for. And I'm going to have my parents that I got to figure out how I'm going to navigate that generation through a time they have never understood, because they were the spoiled children of the war generation. And they did a lot of great things. The boomers did a lot of great things, including drive all this prosperity through their consumption. But they are no longer going to be consuming. They are no longer going to be buying the dip of the equities markets. And they're too old to wait and ride out the rise of crypto because they need the money now. Their pensions are vulnerable for the first time ever, which means the promises that they worked their whole life for are likely to evaporate for some or most somewhere in the next 10 years to make all this transition happen for the rest of us. And so have empathy for them instead of hate, right? Again, if we can get back to a world where instead of looking at what the other person did wrong, instead of throwing the other thing under the bus, which I know we're a far way from because our leaders are not demonstrating that, but just understand that cyclically, that has to happen too, because we have to get so fed up that a new generation of leaders emerges that are going to not be polarizing and that are going to, you know, be there to help build back after the collapse. And the collapse is just a reversion to more simpler times. It's not a collapse of like, you know, something to worry about. It just means that the complexity gets so much that no one understands what to fix. And so the only way forward is to just start over. And that's what you're living in, guys. This is the most exciting 10 to 15 year window in the history of humankind. It's never happened with 8 billion people before. It's never happened with the majority of limited cities. It's never happened with worlds connected to each other in nanoseconds and picoseconds with high bandwidth connectivity and the ability to create commerce. It's never happened where you could unlock the potential of 3 billion people who live in poverty around the world prior to COVID, who don't have a bank account and who've never been able to participate, but now have a smartphone, but don't know exactly how powerful it is and how much it makes them. The opportunities are endless. And all you have to do is figure out what you're going to contribute to that pie. You don't have to tackle the whole thing. So that's my message.
Awesome. And I think that is a gem of a final thought. And everyone listening, trust me, you are going to want to listen through all of this a couple of times just to unpack all the powerful messages that are within it. But Chris, what are some ways that people can stay connected with you and learn more about some of the various projects you have going on?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the chrisjsnook.com site is you know, the best place to, you know, book me for speaking things or just kind of follow where I'm at. LinkedIn is a good place to follow me. It's pretty much where I'm most active. Twitter, I'm active too. My following is not huge on Twitter, but my LinkedIn presence and Twitter is pretty much where I spend most of my time. And then, you know, as far as projects that we're working on, you know, the Sandcastle Challenge and YO Hackathon, that's coming up. So if you're a developer, if you're interested in anything related to kind of the future of blockchain related enterprise apps, AI, machine learning, crypto, you know, come get on the wait list at yohackathon.io for September. We're going to be doing a virtual hybrid event. That's going to be insane. I co-produce it with Rich Kopcho and Caitlin Long and several others. We're real excited about kind of the format this year in its third year. And, you know, we'll be giving away probably close to $250,000 in bounties and cash money for the Sandcastle teams. And so that's kind of what's up and coming and kind of on the radar for September. So those are good places to kind of follow.
Awesome. Well, again, Chris, really appreciate all your time and all your knowledge. And for everyone listening, stay cryptocurrent.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of Cryptocurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency. You'll receive daily emails Monday through Friday that are personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Are you an accredited investor looking to invest in cryptocurrency? Crescent City Capital can help. Go to crescentcitycapital.com for more information. If you're finding value in our content, please take 5 minutes to leave a 5-star review and a great comment. Also, please make sure to share this podcast with others. Hello, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the quality of this podcast. I can only thank my amazing producer, Andrew DeRitter with DeRitter Productions, who has put this together. If you have any podcast, visual, or video needs, please go to DeRitterProductions.com. That's DERITTER Productions.com.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Cryptocurrent with Richard Carthon. We'll be back with more exciting developments from the world of blockchain and cryptocurrency next week. But until then, stay cryptocurrent.
exits now.